So this story, it's a great story. It's a story about Jesus and friends of his, Martha and Mary, and their brother, Lazarus. And I think that it kind of reveals to us how we kind of experience our longings in life, how we experience the things that we long for, the things that we hope for. And what we long for, I think, reveals something about us. Now, when I was in college, I got really into football, okay? So I was so into football, I would watch the Tuesday night MAC games, okay? Did anybody ever watch the MAC games on Tuesday night? Anybody know what I'm talking about? All right, I see a few honest hands out there. Okay, there is no reason in the world why anybody should watch MAC football on Tuesday night unless you just have something within you where you just long to be entertained in that kind of way. You just long to experience that kind of football just nonstop, like you're just constantly looking for it. I think about food that we long for. You see food, and one of the experiences that I have is, I don't know if you've ever had this happen, but you probably have if you live in a neighborhood. You get home from work, and you smell someone else's grill. Anybody know what I'm talking about? You smell somebody else's grill, and when you smell the grill, all of a sudden it reveals a longing within you. I wasn't planning on cooking steak, but all of a sudden the universe has called to me and I need to go to the store and get steak. And so, you know, that reveals something within us, reveals our hunger, reveals a desire within us. And this story about Lazarus, I think what we see, not just in the raising of Lazarus, but in the very sense of what is kind of underlaying the story, is we get a sense of what we are truly longing for when we talk about restoration, what we are truly longing for when we experience those longings and those desires within our lives. So what we've been looking at as we've been through the series, we've been kind of had as a key verse, Joel 2, verse 25. And this is what it says. It says, "I will repay you the years the locusts have eaten." And what it's talking about is the longings that we have, the desires that we have, how we long for things, we long for things to be restored, and God is saying that he is going to restore even what seems like it was lost, even what seems like it is gone. He will repay even those things for us. And we have different longings within our lives. We have different longings, and they reveal different things for us. Last week, Emma and I got to go to this place called Curacao. It's on the Southern Caribbean, and our agenda while we were in Curacao, do you know what it was? Nothing. It was just to sit on the beach. It was just to look at the waves, enjoy the sunshine. And you know what that revealed about me? It revealed I was tired. It revealed that I needed just a break. And so those kinds of experiences will reveal things about us. So our question for today is, what does our longing reveal for longing for restoration reveal about us? When we are longing for restoration, when we are longing for that experience, when we are longing for a sense of God's revelation in our lives and the restoration to be experienced, what does that reveal about us? I think if we look at this story, we can see a little bit of that. We can see a little bit of the experience of what those longings look like. So let me kind of set the scene. So you got Martha and Mary, they're these two sisters, and they've got a brother named Lazarus. At the beginning of chapter 11, we're told that word reaches Jesus that Lazarus is sick. Jesus knows Lazarus is going to die, and yet he doesn't do anything. He does not respond. He does not move in that direction. He waits a couple of days. By the time he gets there, he finds out that Lazarus has been dead for 4 days. Now, this is significant, and here's the reason why it is significant that it's 4 days. In Jewish culture, there was a belief that was taught in the time of Jesus that when you died, for 3 days, the soul would kind of hover above the body. It was kind of like this, you know, the soul is still there, longing to be rejoined to the body. And then I guess on day four, it would give up. I don't know exactly what happened on day four, but the understanding was on day four, the soul would depart and the body would begin to decompose. And so that is the point that we are at in Lazarus' death. Lazarus has died. He is at the point of decomposition, and Jesus has waited until this point to show up on the scene. And so listen to these words that his sister Martha says to him. We pick up in verse 21 of chapter 11. "Lord," Martha said to Jesus, "if you had been here, my brother would not have died." You see those words underlined? If you had, if you had. How many of you have looked back on your life and you've thought of experiences where you kind of had that perspective? If I had just done this different. If I hadn't have said that one thing, if I had just made this one decision slightly differently, if I had just gone one direction different, whatever it might be, we look back on our lives often with regret and frustration and desire because we have those moments of going, if we had experienced it a little bit differently. And what Martha is saying is she is recognizing, Jesus, if you had just been here, I know you wouldn't have died. Jesus, I know you are a healer. Jesus, I know you can do miraculous things. I know that if you were here, everything would have been okay. But Jesus hadn't shown up. Jesus delayed. Sometimes we have that experience. Sometimes we have that delay, that experience of God not showing up on the timetable that we had hoped for. And Martha is frustrated. We can understand her frustrations. And our longing for restoration, one of the things that reveals about us is our frustrations. It reveals to us where we are frustrated, where we have felt let down, where we have felt as though things didn't go the way that we honestly wanted them to go. And our longing for restoration, our longing for things to be made right, for things to be made whole, it reveals to us where those frustrations are present in our lives. Now, the story continues, and right away, we see that Martha has a little bit of faith. It says, but I know that even now, God will give you whatever you ask. So what is she saying there? What is she saying when she says, I know that even now, God will give you whatever you ask? Now, there was a common culture that when someone had passed away and religious leaders would come to visit, when teachers would come to visit people that were a part of the community, that they would pray a prayer over the deceased, they would pray a prayer over the family. Maybe that's all that Martha is looking for. But you got to think she's kind of hoping for a little bit more. She's saying, even now, I believe that you can do, that God will do whatever you ask. Even now, I recognize that there is a power in your presence of you being here. Even though I have my frustrations, I also have hope. And our longings for restoration, what they reveal to us is they reveal to us where our hopes lie as well. For Martha, her hope was in Jesus. Her hope was in the promise that he was the Messiah, that he was from God, and that his very presence there in her crisis moment still could speak into her experience and still could reveal what she needed to experience in that moment. So it reveals our hopes. And for her, the hope and the longing was for God to do some sort of restoration. Now, we don't know exactly, we're not told exactly what she expected, although the next few verses kind of indicate that she maybe wasn't expecting exactly what happened, because what's ultimately going to happen, well, I don't want to give it away, that's the end of the chapter. But what we see here is she has this hope and this expectation that Jesus' very presence will make a difference, that Jesus being there will make a difference, and there's a hope and a longing within it. And so the story continues, and there's kind of a little bit of back and forth. And Jesus says, your brother will rise again. She says, I know he'll rise at the resurrection at the last day. This was a belief that was prevalent in Jesus' day, that there would be this end times resurrection on the last day, on judgment day, and people would rise, people who had passed away would rise, and all those who were holy that had lived according to God's purposes, they would rise and be risen in bodily form. And so Jesus says, you know, I'm talking about more than just that. And this is the way he phrases it. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live, even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this? Yes, Lord, she replied. I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who is to come into the world. Now, we go back a verse earlier. This is the key phrase that Jesus says. I'm sorry, two verses earlier. It says, I am the resurrection and the life. So what she's hoping for, what she's longing for, is for her brother to be restored, for his life to be restored. She is longing for a hope there, and she knows it's a far-off hope, that the day of resurrection is yet to come. It is far away. She is looking for something that is far away, but Jesus is saying in this moment that his very presence is the presence of resurrection. He says, I am the resurrection and the life. I am the resurrection and the life. Now, we've talked about this as we've looked at a few of these other stories from the Gospel of John. When we hear that phrase, I am, he is identifying himself with God. I am, all the I am statements in John, they point to the fact that he is equating himself with the very presence of God in that moment. I am was the name of God. And so he's saying, I am the resurrection and the life. So I am the Lord, but he's also saying that with that, I am the very presence of resurrection and life. Now, I'm going to give you kind of a silly example, but a lot of times what happens at my house is, some of you other parents can probably relate to this scene, is either I or my wife Emma are in the very process of cooking food. Okay, you've got the scene. Food is being prepared. It is obvious to the entire world that food is being prepared. So what do our kids do in that moment? They come into the kitchen and they grab a snack, right? And so, and usually what they grab for the snack is not something as nutritious as what is being prepared on the stovetop. And so we sit there and we're like, oh my gosh, just wait a little bit longer. You'll get the real thing. But, you know, they want that snack. They want that pick-me-up there in the moment. So the question is what is Martha looking for? And what does Jesus really have to offer? What Jesus really has to offer is the life. What Jesus really comes to offer is the resurrection. Jesus is the Messiah. Jesus is the very presence of God. We're not looking for just a pick-me-up. We're not looking for just a quick fix. We're not looking for just a random healing. We are looking for the very presence of Jesus in this moment. And that's why this story is so significant. It's not about the miracle that's going to take place. It is about revealing who Jesus is. And that the longings that they had, the desires that they had, were being fulfilled in Jesus. Now, to understand kind of what's going on here with this line that says, I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of the God, the one who is to come into the world, and what Jesus says right before that, whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this? It harkens back to John chapter 3, that promise of eternal life that we hear in that famous verse of John 3:16, that for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believeth in him should not perish but have everlasting life. I don't know why I always say it in the King James. I just learned it that way. But that verse reminds us of our need for eternal life, and it can only be fulfilled in Jesus. Now, a lot of times what we do is we try to treat the symptoms without necessarily treating the root of what's going on. We've got a Lenten study we're doing on Wednesdays, and we've got a great group that comes together. We're walking through a book together, and the first few weeks talked a lot about sin, so those were really fun conversations. And as we were talking about sin, one of the things we talked about was how we have kind of, you know, this underlying symptom of sin in our lives. There's a cause for it. There's a brokenness within us. And a lot of times what we try to do when we have a sickness is we try to treat the symptoms without actually treating the sickness. Now, I'll give you an example of this. So a few months ago, I was having a really hard time sleeping. And so I'm really struggling to get to sleep one night. And I'm just like, I mean, I'm just fighting throughout the night. Like, cannot go to sleep. I mean, tried everything that you could possibly imagine. And so then I finally got to the point where I was like, okay, I'm just going to go to the drugstore, look up online, find out who's open in the middle of the night. Surprisingly more than I thought. And so I go to the drugstore and I'm like, okay, maybe it's reflux. Let me get something for reflux. Maybe it's anxiety. Let me get something for anxiety. Maybe it's, you know, I'm just not tired enough. Let me get something for that. And so I'm like collecting all these things. And then I'm back on Google trying to figure out, can you take all of these things healthfully at the same time? And so I'm trying to figure all that out. And eventually I got to sleep. Now, what was I doing? I was treating the symptoms. I was treating what, you know, I thought would help me to get to sleep because of the symptoms that I was experiencing. But there was an underlying sickness there that I couldn't just treat with medicine. There were stresses in my life that until they were resolved, I wouldn't be able to get the rest that I was longing for. And so what we find in Jesus is that he's not just there to treat the symptoms. He's not just there to treat the moment. Jesus is there to address the very need that we have at our core. There is a brokenness. within us. There is what we are told that the wages of sin, the presence of sin in our lives, the wages of sin in Romans 6:23 are death. That symptom or that root within us, that sickness within us of our sin and our brokenness keeps us from living into the life that God desires for us. So why did Jesus come? Jesus came because on our own, we can't overcome sin. On our own, we can't overcome the wages of sin, which are death. The one thing that could not be conquered with all of the amazing developments, the one thing that could just never be conquered on our own is death. And Jesus shows up on the scene and he says, I am the resurrection and the life. Now, the story's pretty awesome. So I got to tell you how the story ends because that would be a really lame sermon if you didn't find out what happened. So we fast forward in the story. The other sister comes into the scene. He has a conversation with Mary. We get one of the most famous Bible verses of all time, John 11, verse 35, Jesus wept. It was a favorite. If you ever grew up in a church where you had to memorize Bible verses, that's the one a lot of people like to memorize because it's literally the shortest verse in the Bible. Jesus wept. He's moved by the sense that Lazarus has passed away, that Mary and Martha are grieving. And then he gets to the tomb. Now, when I was growing up, there was a Christian music artist by the name of Carmen. Anybody remember Carmen? So Carmen would do like these really dramatic, it was like sometimes kind of like a rap, sometimes like a spoken word, sometimes kind of really dramatic singing. And he had this little song that he did on the raising of Lazarus. And what he does is so he kind of has like this conversation with Lazarus, and Lazarus has gone up to heaven because he's been in the tomb for 4 days. So he's having a conversation up at heaven. And then all of a sudden, he hears like this knock at the door. And so Carmen's kind of doing the voices back and forth. And all of a sudden, you hear this really deep voice that goes, Lazarus. And then Lazarus kind of leans in a little bit. And then you hear the deep voice again, Lazarus. It just kind of keeps building. And then finally, Lazarus goes, Jesus? Lazarus! Jesus! And it just kind of keeps going back and forth like that. Until eventually you hear, and the music crescendos, and you hear like this, the big booming voice of Jesus goes, come forth! And then it's this awesome moment where Lazarus is raised from the dead. And I don't think that's how it happened at all. But it made for a really good song when I was a kid. What we see at the end of this chapter, or at the end of this section at least, is that Jesus prays. He looks up and he says, Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me. And when he said this, Jesus called out in a loud voice, Lazarus, come out. The dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. And Jesus said to them, take off the grave clothes and let him go. Take off the grave clothes and let him go. Lazarus is at the point where life is over. Not only is life over, the soul is given up on Lazarus. The soul in Carmen's song, the soul's already in heaven having a conversation up there. But there in that moment, Jesus says, that doesn't matter to me. We're going to raise Lazarus from the dead. So he calls Lazarus out, and he comes walking out. Now, to kind of get a picture of this, I tried to find some old artwork, and none of the images I could find really depicted this in a big enough fashion. But anyone know what a mummy looks like? You kind of have like a visual of a mummy. So a mummy is like, you know, everything's wrapped up. That's pretty much what Lazarus would have been like. You would have had the limbs kind of bound together. You would have had a face cloth that would keep even his mouth from being able to open. And so when Jesus says, you know, help him get out of those grave clothes, that would be great. That's what he's talking about. He's talking about the wraps of linen around him. Because without the wraps of linen taken off of him, someone who has been laying dead for 4 days is not going to be able to move very effectively, even with the miraculous power of Jesus in that moment. And so they take off the grave clothes. Now, I was joking with Kenji the other day. I said, this is where I wish I was a black preacher, because I think we could really have some fun with this and you know, just kind of really build it up to a crescendo and, you know, say, some of y'all need to take off your grave clothes. And then we could really, you know, get some chants going back and forth, and y'all could participate by responding and things like that, things you do in Kenji talks, but you don't do in I talk. But but that image to me is so powerful. Because here's what happens in that moment. Here's what happens in that moment. The very community that has been mourning for 4 days now gets to take part in the miracle as they are invited to remove the grave clothes so that the dead man who is now walking can live and move and breathe. Now, here's why this matters to us. I mean, this matters for a lot of reasons. Our longing for restoration, our longing for life is found and experienced in Jesus, because there's a need that we cannot satisfy on our own. That's one part of it. But here's the other part of it. The community is a part of the ministry of resurrection. The community is the part of the ministry of restoration. The community is a part of people finding the life and the hope that they need. And here's why it matters tangibly to us. We're sitting here 2 weeks out from Easter. We've got Palm Sunday next week. We've got Easter in 2 weeks. And the message that's going to be proclaimed over the course of the next 2 weeks is the most powerful, central message of the entire Christian faith. That Jesus Christ came to this earth, that he gave his life on a cross. He came not to be a king, but he came to serve. And as he came to serve as a humble king, giving his life on the cross, God raised him from the dead, because he is the resurrection and he is the life. And through that, we are all invited to live into that same life and that same restoration and that same hope. And there are so many people who need help getting out of their grave clothes. And so my hope is that we would use these next couple of weeks to pray about, God, who are you calling upon me to invite to be a part of Palm Sunday, to invite to be a part of Easter, to invite to experience the restoration that is only found in the love and the hope of Jesus Christ, who is the resurrection and the life.